Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
I'm Contessa Brewer, in for Brian Sullivan tonight. Right now on Last Call, call them the quiet meme stocks. Why a flurry of overlooked names suddenly are surging. Right on Tesla's tail, another auto giant could take Tesla's title as the world's biggest car maker. Buckle up, a wild trading debut awaits Donald Trump's Truth Social tomorrow. We have a special preview. And back comes Bitcoin, how the newest rally could be giving the most bullish signal yet. Plus, breaking in just the last couple hours, Dodgers megastar Shohei Ohtani speaks out on the scandal rocking baseball. And it's Make It Mondays. We'll meet the entrepreneur who has 3D printed rockets that are giving SpaceX a run for its money. All that and more over the next hour. Last Call is up right now. Good evening on the East Coast and good afternoon out West. A major shakeup at Boeing playing out right here on CNBC. CEO Dave Calhoun announcing he'll step down at the end of the year. Boeing's chairman, Larry Kellner, will be right behind him when his term is up. And Boeing commercial airplane CEO, Stan Deal, out immediately. The big turnover in leadership amid a number of high-profile safety incidents involving Boeing planes, including the recent gaping hole in the side of that jet during an Alaska Airlines flight. Well, earlier today, Dave Calhoun sat down exclusively with CNBC's Phil LeBeau.
We have another mountain to climb. Let's not avoid what happened with Alaska Air. Let's not avoid the call for action. Let's not avoid the changes that we have to make in our factory. Let's not avoid the need to slow down a bit and let the supply chain catch up. We got to get at that, just like we got at the rest. And we will get through that.
Calhoun also spoke on what he hopes to see in a replacement CEO.
It's not just the production of the airplane. It's the development of the next airplane. Our next leader is going to develop and call out the next airplane for the Boeing company. It'll be a $50 billion investment. That will all happen on that next leader's watch. So I would like somebody who clearly has the experience inside our industry.
Boeing stock is down more than 25% year to date. We have lots of questions at the moment. Will the shakeup fix the problems, the safety issues at Boeing? Will it be enough to get the stock moving in a forward trajectory? Joining me now, Yale School of Management Senior Associate Dean and CNBC contributor Jeff Sonnenfeld. Jeff, it's good to see you today. First of all, what does Boeing accomplish with this massive change in leadership?
Well, thank you. It's good to see you, too, although it's tragic again to see this kind of governance carnage. This is a revered company. It's obviously an iconic, a global pillar of American greatness, and it's badly hobbled right now. So what this leadership change does is somewhat symbolic, more than substantive. But what I'm hearing from lots of Boeing insiders is that this is the first day that they've gone back to work with a smile on their faces. Dave Calhoun, I have to tell you, used to be a neighbor of ours here. I know him. I like him. I like Kellner. I knew Mr. Kellner from his prior life, and there's somewhat of was symbolic sacrifice. But David Calhoun was not loved when he came in there. He wasn't seen as the warm and fuzzy guy. He's not a culture carrier. Seeing that interview both inspires you and gives you the chills that you're looking at a mini Jack Welch come back to life. That production-driven culture is what he stood for. That wasn't what the company needed at this point. They're missing their production yardsticks, which is why the airlines were all mad at him. He's a better communicator than his predecessor, Dennis Muilenburg. None of these people are villains.
And by the way, David Calhoun came in and it was dealing with the fallout from the MAX jets and has been really trouble-plagued since then. Let me get another perspective on this. Allied Pilots Association spokesperson, American Airlines pilot Dennis Tasier. I know you have voiced concerns, Dennis, about Boeing planes in the past. Do you think this reassures investors, the flying public, and those who work inside Boeing that the company is ready to go in a new direction? Dennis, can you hear me?
Well, we're not as enthusiastic as I can. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead.
We're not as enthusiastic as your guest we've seen this before. Yes, Mr. Calhoun was different than the previous CEO, but Boeing is 0-2 in CEOs. I fly the 737 MAX included. I'm on a trip now. And we've got to see a realignment from a shareholder economy into an engineering and quality control economy for Boeing. We're a little bit of meet the new boss, same as the old boss, suspicion here. So bottom line is Boeing's got to get its act together, and changing the names may help, but we need to see the corrected output.
So how do you think that, Dennis, how do they do that? How does Boeing try to make it an engineer's a company rather than one that is operated by or owing to shareholders?
Well, they need to bring in somebody who knows the business. And I must have clarified my prior comments if my fellow guest thinks that I'm euphoric about this change. The change hasn't happened. We've seen some management accountability by a board that that bears some culpability here. There's some fabulous people on the board, but we haven't seen them step up before. So we're just seeing the beginning of accountability. It's who they pick now. There's some fantastic candidates. Greg Smith, their former CFO, is tremendous. He's beloved in there. He knows every part of this business. Mark Allen, who is head of international, just recently left. He's fantastic. Both these people, and they're in their mid-50s. They know the industry cold. Dave Gitlin off the board. I should also mention, by the way, that Smith is the current chairman of American Airlines. He's so well thought of, their former CFO.
You know, it's interesting that when we're looking at who's already been tapped to take over, the board chair has an insider taking over. The head of commercial has an insider taking over. There is nobody to take over yet for Dave Calhoun. Should the board have already been looking at a successor as soon as they brought Dave Calhoun in?
They failed. He's like a wounded animal in the corner. It's great to have somebody in an ambassadorial role if it's a positive succession on his own schedule. This is not his schedule, and it's dangerous to have him there. He should be exited as soon as possible, and he should have no voice in the naming of a successor. Phil's interview was superb, but he should not be the guy who's picking the successor. It should be probably somebody, as you suggest, from the outside, and there are some fantastic candidates out there as a fresh start.
Dennis, what kind of change would make you feel safer when you're at the helm of Boeing planes?
Well, to the person I'm on with, here, we stand with you. There's no way he should be involved in this. So bottom line is the captain failed. The board has taken control of this. Although we still wonder some of those names you mentioned, we'll just see what happens.
You think they're too inside baseball? You think that they've been too close to the organization as it stands now?
Absolutely. I don't run a corporation. I fly the jets with the souls on board that I'm tasked to protect. And you failed to instill that trust. And we're on round two here. So, the real captain of the ship is the board of directors. It's gender excluded, good old boys network. I don't want to go that deep in calling it to account. But the bottom line is your output is not producing as safe an airplane as it can be, Mr. Calhoun said that they had a quality escape when a door blew off. Well, now we're looking at a leadership escape, to use those words. Yeah. And recently mentioned the MAX was the safest airplane out there because of the scrutiny. You said that right after the MAX returned to service after the MCAS disasters. So we've got to see the words, the words and the clever slogans are great for these types of interviews. But what I need to see is an airplane that's been vetted, engineered, and properly assembled so that I don't have to run special checklists in an emergency. I just do my job and run the normal error trapping.
Dennis,
the captain is right. They still have a safety problem. They still have a governance problem, and they have a production problem. They've lost a lot of their talented engineers post-COVID, a lot of their skilled workers. And they have, you know, 171 Maxes have gotten permission to take off. That's great. They were the Max 9s. But we have 1,000 Max 10s that can't get off the ground. Good for the FAA, by the way, for taking such a severe hand at this point. When Mike Whitaker went out there to take a look at the factories, nobody even talked about safety there. And that's about $100 billion of revenue that they can't get back up in the air. So when all those airlines go off and want to meet with the board without the CEO, that's not a good sign for the CEO.
So at this point, we stay and watch who the replacement will be. Jeff Sonnenfeld, Captain Tasier, thank you very much. I hope you have the safe rest of your flight. Let's take a look at what happened to your money today. The Dow, the S&P, the 500, the NASDAQ, all down across the board. You can see the Dow off almost 0.5%, S&P by 0.33%, and the NASDAQ down by 0.33%, too. On to our studs and duds, the biggest winner of the day, Supermicro Computer, up 7.2% on a bullish call from JP Morgan. The biggest loser, Take-Two Interactive, down more than 4% on reports of delays with Grand Theft Auto 6. Let's get a look at futures right now. It looks like we're ticking higher, slightly, but higher. Up next, Truth. Donald Trump's social media company prepares for its trading debut tomorrow. It may get even wilder than some expected. Plus, the automaker that could soon put Tesla in its rear view. Stay with us.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Here we go. Tomorrow's News Tonight, the stories you and Wall Street will be talking about. First up, Adam Neumann, the former CEO and co-founder of WeWork, is trying to buy the company back. According to the Wall Street Journal, Neumann recently submitted a bid to buy the now bankrupt company for more than $500 million. But it's unclear how he would finance that purchase. CNBC has also confirmed now that the $500 million offer, per person familiar with the deal, is adding intrigue to it. CNBC's Deirdre Bosa just obtained a statement from Flow, which is Adam Neumann's current company, and it says, quote, 2 weeks ago, a coalition of half a dozen financing partners whose identities are known to WeWork and to its advisors submitted a potential bid for substantially more than the Wall Street Journal reported without contacting us. Again, that coming from our colleague Deirdre Bosa. What is the true price here? Time will tell. We're going to bring you more details as we get them in. Next, DWACC soaring ahead of merged trading with Donald Trump's Truth Social. Shares jumped 35% today after a court reduced the bond the former president has to pay in order to appeal a New York fraud ruling by 60%. And with the move, Trump enters the list of the world's 500 richest people with a net worth of $6.5 billion. The merged media company begins trading tomorrow under the ticker DJT, Trump's initials. What should investors know ahead of its debut? With me tonight for more is Axios business editor Dan Primack. Good to see you, Dan. Thanks for being on Last Call. We saw the chart there of the stock sort of just moving along and then reduced bail, and it took a pretty significant leg higher. Why do you think that was?
Yeah, I'm not sure it was about the bail. I think it was about DWACC said that they were going to start listing tomorrow, that they were going to relist as DJT. They'd gotten the shareholder vote last Friday. We assumed they would list at some point this week. They announced they were going to list tomorrow morning. I think that was what moved the stock. People who want to buy this thing got excited and decided they wanted to get in before DWACC becomes DJT.
Okay, and so we've got the relisting tomorrow under this DJT, under a new ticker in this point. What about his shares? He has to hold on to them a while. Does he have any window to sell ahead of his hold pattern?
He does not. He is under a 6-month hold for his shares, which are in the tens of millions, maybe around 70 million shares. He has a 6-month hold. Now, he can ask the board of directors for a special dispensation to sell ahead of that inside that 6-month window. And it is worth noting the board includes his own son and a couple members of his former administration. But it's a really tricky balancing act, because if he asks for that, if it looks like Trump himself is heading to the exits, other people might run. And then there's the question, is there enough market demand to buy such a large number of shares that he'd be looking to offload? So it's a little bit tricky. He could sell some, perhaps, if he got the board to let him, but then that could tank the value of what he's got left.
Oh, is there a reason for him to want to borrow against those shares?
To borrow against those shares? Sure. I mean, he clearly has a bunch of, he's got a bunch of court penalties against him, even though he got the amount reduced today. It's still a lot of money. So there's a reason he would want to borrow against them. Whether someone would be willing to, though, is another question. The underlying company here is lousy. I mean, you're talking about a few million dollars in revenue for this thing. I mean, there's been a bunch of comparisons to this to GameStop. I mean, maybe if GameStop was Google, the company here, there's not much of a company underlying this. So to lend against it, you're taking a pretty big risk as the lender.
Dan, good to talk to you. Thank you for joining us on Last Call.
Thank you.
Still ahead, taking the air out of Tesla's tires, the automaker that may soon surpass the EV giant. Next.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Time for a last call watch lesson tonight. It's bound to leave a bitter taste in your mouth, because just in time for Easter weekend, a relentless surge in cocoa prices is somehow getting even worse. Some new financing issues for Ghana's cocoa industry fueled yet another jump today. Prices gained more than 7%. Now, most cocoa supplies come from West Africa. They have been hammered because of dry weather and disease. After today's gain, cocoa prices are now up more than 50% in the past month, up 130% since the start of 2024, and they have more than tripled over the past year. The run-up is so intense that cocoa now costs more than copper on a metric ton basis. And which would you rather eat? So that's the next candy bar or the chocolate Easter egg. Essentially is more valuable than one of the world's most critical industrial metals. And experts predict that cocoa costs are likely going higher from here. So my take is chocolate. Get it while you can still afford it. Welcome back. Longtime Tesla bull Adam Jonas out with a new call on the auto market. And it's raising some eyebrows on both Wall Street and in Detroit. In his latest note, the Morgan Stanley analyst compared Toyota's surging value and Tesla's weak stock performance, saying, quote, Tesla would hand its crown of being the world's highest valued auto company back to Toyota. Is Jonas right? Toyota's shares have surged nearly 40% so far this year, while Tesla's have fallen 30%. Now, look, this is important because Jonas is sort of like the OG Tesla bull. He's making what many thought were wildly bullish calls over a decade ago. So if the analyst who saw the Tesla bull case before anybody else now says Toyota could be king, should investors listen? Joining me now is Gerber Kawasaki, CEO and Tesla investor, Gerber Kawasaki, and GLJ Research CEO and longtime Tesla bear, Gordon Johnson. Thank you both for being with me here on Last Call. All right, so we've got this call on Tesla. Ross, give me a sense of what you think. I mean, he's just basically saying Toyota's coming back from behind and Tesla better watch out.
First of all, Adam Jonas was not a Tesla bull back in 2018. In fact, he downgraded the stock to a $20 price target at the worst time. It was actually me and Kathy and a couple other people were the only bulls at that time. And Adam was no help. That is for sure. But that said, you know, Jonas is making, I think, a fair point that the problems that Elon has caused Tesla has definitely lowered the valuation and the perception of Tesla's future to a point that maybe a boring car company like Toyota might compare to an exciting tech company like Tesla. But any comparison, I think, is almost moot.
I don't know if you know the old fable about the tortoise and the hare, but in the end, the tortoise wins. Slow and steady wins the race over the hare that's bouncing all over the place and gets there really fast. Also, by the way, I got to say, Gordon, we saw on Twitter that Ross has kind of thrown down the gauntlet. I have the dubious honor to debate Gordon on why Tesla is a thousand times better company than Toyota. Go ahead. Give it your best case.
Yeah, so we've always argued that EVs are a niche and that they were going to go away. And I think we're seeing that slowly happen. You've had a number of companies, whether it be the battery companies, CATL, Panasonic, LG, the car companies, Ford, Stellantis, et cetera, all pull back billions of dollars of planned investment in EVs. Here's why Toyota bet on basically plug-in hybrids. Tesla bet on pure electrics. And here's why plug-ins are better. Very simply. The cost of an average plug-in, $27,000. The cost of an average BEV, $44,000. Keep in mind, with a plug-in PHEV, a plug-in hybrid vehicle, your first 40 miles, you get electric. Most people do not drive more than 50 miles a day. So the first 40 miles, you get electric. And then if you have that range anxiety, you shift over to your gas. That's number two. So it's much more efficient for the car buyer. Cheaper, more efficient. And then number three is the resale value. Tesla's resale values have imploded. Why? Because the more you drive that car, the more the battery drains, and thus the less value that battery has long term. So when you look at normal people, not rich people like Ross Gerber, not the 1%, but you look at the 90% of people who can only afford one car, the PHEV is by far the most efficient, and we're seeing that real time. Look, Tesla's currently valued at more than Toyota and BYD, despite the fact that they sell just 16% of the cars they do. And it looks like in Q1, Tesla sales are going to be down year over year. That's the first time outside of COVID ever Tesla sales are going to be down year over year. And it looks like it's going to repeat in Q2. The market is saying loudly, no matter what Ross says, we don't want Tesla's cars. And we're seeing that in the numbers.
Ross?
Well, EV sales are up substantially year over year. So I don't know about this niche thing that he's talking about. In fact, in California, 25% of cars sold are EVs right now and growing, and we're the fourth largest country in the world. So that said, if California is doing this, it's going to happen across the country. The only issue with Tesla is the fact that Elon has turned off the core demographic. The company itself is phenomenal, making phenomenal products. I mean, if you put a Model Y next to a Corolla, it's like two different vehicles.
Well what are you saying? Are you saying that Tesla would benefit from the kind of leadership shakeup that we're seeing at Boeing tonight?
No, I'm saying that one of the things that's hurting Tesla is Elon Musk's ownership of X and his opinions about many things that are incredibly divisive. And it has turned off an enormous amount of consumers. And it really is distressing to me. That said, okay, Tesla is an amazing company. For example, it has a charging business, a monopoly on the charging business of the future. What's
but not
that
enough
worth?
Of them. I mean, the infrastructure across
right,
the
so
United
Nations. They can double the amount of chargers they have, no problem, and keep growing and growing and growing. And they also make battery packs that every utility in the world needs. They have a technology
but
in there called
Gordon, are you
full self-driving that's quite brilliant.
Could I jump
Toyota
in there?
Has yeah. none of it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, so Ross talks about Tesla being a technology company when 93% of their revenues came from selling cars and nearly 100% of their gross margins come from selling cars. Ross talks about them having a monopoly on charging. Hold on, Ross. Talks about them having a monopoly on charging where they've open sourced their charging network. Their charging revenues are less than 1% of revenues, and over 90% of the charging that Tesla owners do is at home. They don't go to superchargers.
That's right.
So that's another key flaw in this continued argument from Ross that it's more than a tech company. It's a car company. And car companies are highly capital intensive and low margin. Tesla's operating margins are now below BYD, below Toyota, below Ford, below basically everyone else, and about to move lower.
Ross,
so Tesla's a car company. They don't have any technological advantage. Their 4680 batteries have lower density than the prior iteration. They buy batteries from CATL, Panasonic, and LG. And their FSD is anything but. They rank last on...
That's it, Gordon. If you bought Tesla stock 5 years ago versus technology. Toyota,
so
you've
this
made
is a
eight
company
times your
that's
money.
Not a tech company. It's a car company. And they're being valued as such. And I think Adam Jonas is coming around. But if you look at Adam Jonas's valuation, he gives Tesla $100 billion for Dojo, which doesn't even appear in their 10Qs or 10Ks.
Listen,
he's giving
them valuation
for business that they're not even in.
But I also want to get your perspective then on the value of Toyota, because what he's basically saying is that the fact that Toyota has a solid, it may be boring, but a solid performing vehicle, and the hybrid seems to be the way that consumers are going, that this is what gives it real power in outstripping Tesla, Ross.
Consumers are not going to hybrids. Hybrids are an option for consumers that I think are a good option for many consumers, especially if you're price conscious and you're okay driving a Prius or Corolla. But many of the young people today want to drive cool cars that have some value, don't have to be rich to afford a $40,000 car, okay? So I don't know where Gordon lives, but where I live in Santa Monica, there's a diverse community of people, and they all choose Teslas if they can afford them. And that is one of the issues Tesla's dealing with, it is lowering the prices to try to bring in more consumers. But that said, you're talking about a car company, you know, Toyota, and you're talking about a tech company that makes cars, because Toyota doesn't have any robot plans, does it? It hasn't rolled out any robot plans recently. So what we're really talking about here is, why isn't Tesla executing as well as it should? But it has nothing to do with what consumers want. They want EVs. They want the best cars on the road. They're the cheapest, most efficient cars to run over time. And Tesla's batteries have been phenomenally performing, Gordon. They last forever. You can keep a Tesla forever. Okay, so we have Teslas on the road forever. So
well, we haven't gotten there yet.
The only reason Tesla is up
Consumer
because Japan
Reports,
is doing well right now. That's
Ross,
it.
Ross, Consumer Reports, J.D. Power, what car in Europe all ranked Tesla last or close to last in reliability. So when you say they're the best, the experts disagree with you. And with
That's
respect
not
to
true.
Valuation,
it's
Tesla,
just not true. Tesla
show,
cars drive perfectly fine
Ross,
as well as any car. Now, Toyota makes
Listen,
reliable cars.
Ross,
That's
Ross,
true.
Let, Ross, you keep cutting me off. Let me make the point on valuation. So you've had hundreds of car companies emerge as a result of free money policies from the Fed. In 2020 to 2022, if you said you were an electric vehicle company, you were given billions of dollars. There is too much supply. This isn't just a Tesla issue. This is a car writ large issue. There's too many car companies right now, and thus you're going to have a price war. So with respect to valuation, I think margins are going to get competed lower. I think not only Tesla is going to suffer, keep in mind, Tesla trading at 56 times forward earnings versus 6 to 7 times.
I think that's
years,
a fair point.
A lot more downside
for
Tesla.
I think that's
but
a fair point.
Okay, guys, I'm going to leave it there. It reminds me back of my days on MSNBC going at it at politics around primary time. It's a lot of fun. Gordon, Ross, thank you, gentlemen. Coming up, Bitcoin bounces back. It may now be getting its strongest bullish signal yet. Plus, where a quiet meme stock rally looks to be underway. We haven't seen quiet yet in this show. We'll see it next. Well, Bitcoin has been having a bumpy last few days. Today, it's up and back above 70,000, but as you can see, last week, Bitcoin was trading much lower, sliding as low as 60,000 at one point. In stark contrast, while Bitcoin is up, Bitcoin ETFs hit a record in outflows. Last week, the 10 Bitcoin ETFs saw $888 million in total outflows. That's about 94% of total crypto fund flows, according to Bloomberg. Where's the disconnect? Let's bring in CNBC's Mackenzie Sigalos. Why are we seeing Bitcoin rise and everybody ditching ETFs?
So this is definitely a grayscale problem. We've seen these record outflows in the last 2 weeks in GBTC, and a lot of that had to do with the bankruptcy proceedings of Genesis. As part of that, both Genesis and Gemini liquidated about $2.9 billion worth of their GBTC stake. Part of that's just shoring up the cash to pay back creditors. But even before that, Contessa, we just saw Grayscale really struggle with flows because their fees are so much higher. We're talking 1.5% versus 0.3%. That's the next biggest fee here. Now, collectively speaking, we are still looking at $52 billion of assets under management across all the funds. So it's still a promising space, but Grayscale has been struggling.
All right, let's turn to an update now on another crypto-related story that we brought you a couple weeks ago. Two Binance executives held in Nigerian custody. The country was investigating the platform for wrecking its local currency. And now one of those executives has escaped. Nigeria has filed charges of tax evasion against Binance and those two executives. A Binance spokesperson said it's been made aware that one of the executives is no longer in Nigerian custody. Well, we just said that. What do we know about this?
So this is a wild story. We've got Nadeem now. He's a UK and Kenyan national. He's out there. And so it sounds
somewhere.
Somewhere. And it looks like the Nigerian government's trying to work with Interpol to track him down. Meanwhile, you've got Tigran, who is still in custody right now. This is an American citizen who actually worked for the IRS as a special agent for 10 years before he went to work for Binance. It's unclear what's going to happen in terms of next steps, because when you think about it, Contessa, I mean, the American government just settled with Binance for $4.3 billion. They're also holding a Binance executive in the U.S. until he faces his own sentencing. So, I mean, it's a complicated dynamic, but what doesn't look good is that Binance is not paying its taxes in multiple jurisdictions. So a lot of countries now taking issue with the exchange.
Mackenzie Sagalos, thank you for joining us on that. All right. Meanwhile, as Bitcoin is rallying, so are some meme favorite names. Take a look at Reddit, GameStop, Supermicro, and Robinhood. All seeing significant gains today. Reddit alone closing up 30%. Look at this. This is crazy. 15% higher for GameStop. We mentioned earlier in the show, well, I said DWAC, and then my guest called it DWAC, but it soared 35% before Donald Trump's social media company begins trading tomorrow under DJT. It's popping even further after hours, up 8.65%. Joining me now is Surat Sethi, DCLA managing partner and portfolio manager and CNBC contributor. Surat, it's good to see you. Tell me what's happening here. Is this like a little meme pocket that's rallying amid the broader rally?
It is. And you know, you can add other stocks like Carvana in there, too, that were almost taken for dead just a few months ago. A lot of this is option activity. I mean, you can buy options on these stocks for pennies. And the leverage on these on the upside, and it is great, but you can also see it on the downside. So it is the pocket, but it's interesting. As the market's rallying and you're getting a broader based rally, you know, the Mag 7 are not rallying. So investors, or I would call retail speculators, are now finding other pockets, popping up stocks with volume. Kind of we saw this back during the COVID phase. And it's going to be interesting to see how this all ends, because it's the greater fool theory, right? Who's going to be the last one holding the bag? These are not fundamental companies. Most of them are not even making money at this point. So the question is, when you do get a pullback in the market, and you haven't really seen one, we haven't seen one of these 1% or 2% days on the down, these stocks are going to have a huge beta. And what I mean by that is they're not just going to go down 1% or 2%. They could go down, you know, double digits at that point.
We saw SPACs go through a period where they just sputtered. We've got tomorrow DJT coming out and the SPAC there. Do you think this is a stock that the memes keep powering it higher?
I do. I mean, I wouldn't get in the way of if you were trying to short any of this. This is total momentum, speculative momentum as best as it gets. And it can push the stock. But remember, when somebody pulls the money away, this thing could fall really fast, too. It's a roller coaster, and it's a pretty volatile roller coaster. So not trading on fundamentals, not trading on cash flow. So for a long-term investor, very hard to get your arms around. But for short-term, the charts kind of show these things are going up, but they could change at any moment.
Surat, good to see you on this Monday night. Thank you for that.
Straight
ahead, coming out swinging, baseball megastar Shohei Ohtani speaks out on the scandal gripping sports. Where is this headed after all this?
I think for everyone, there's that secret sauce, and I think everyone has their own superpower. You are enough. You don't have to be perfect, and you don't have to fulfill a certain mold. I have to say today, I really think a lot about the younger people, like my daughter, Faith, and so many of her friends who are taking on the world in a brand new way. I find them incredibly inspiring.
We have a bonus TNT for you. Baseball superstar Shohei Ohtani has been embroiled in a scandal over his translator Ipe Mizuhara's alleged gambling addiction and millions of dollars missing. He spoke to the media just a short time ago to try and clear the air, and he placed blame for all of this squarely on his interpreter.
I never bet on baseball or any other sports, and I've never asked somebody to do it on my behalf. In conclusion, Ipe has been stealing money from my account and has told lies.
Of course, this is the MLB's biggest star. He signed a monster 10-year, $700 million contract with the LA Dodgers. Joining me now, senior reporter at Front Office Sports, Michael McCarthy. Okay, so here you've got, I think, probably the highest paid athlete in U.S. history. And he says, this guy who spends all this time with him, who's like basically his shadow, has taken money from him and he did not know it. Does this clear the air for you? Does this put to bed any suspicions that you had about Ohtani's involvement himself, Mike?
It does not, Contessa. I still have way more questions than answers. I mean, you're telling me this guy got access to his account and stole $4.5 million and he didn't know about it? I mean, if my daughter orders Postmates at college, I know about it. And this guy's clueless about five transfers? It beggars belief. Now, I hope he's telling the truth, because if he is telling the truth and he sure seems sincere today, he's probably in the clear. But if he's not, boy, Contessa, he's sure opened him up to a lot of problems for both MLB and the Internal Revenue Service.
Okay, and those investigations are going on right now. MLB is investigating. The Dodgers are looking into it. I will point out, look, Bernie Madoff was able to make off with a lot of people's much more than $4.5 million without people knowing it. So it does happen that people are stolen from and they don't realize it's happening, especially from those that they trust implicitly. What's next for MLB? How bad could this get?
Well, they have to figure out if he violated something called Rule 21, which is a very prominent rule that's in every clubhouse, Contessa, where it says you cannot associate with illegal bookmakers. Now, Mitsuhara's bookie was an illegal Tony Soprano type down in Southern California. The first thing they're going to look at is if Ohtani had any connection to him. If he did have connections to him, then he's got some serious problems.
And he's reportedly cooperating with authorities.
He says he's completely cooperating with authorities. Yes, he is.
Okay, I want to turn you from this because this is ongoing and we're going to get results down the road. I want to talk March Madness. The ratings are coming in. They're impressive. Do you think what we're seeing in terms of the nationwide rollout of legalized sports betting is driving some of these engagement and viewership numbers?
No doubt, Contessa. March Madness has become the second biggest gambling event of the year, behind only the Super Bowl. This year, we're going to wager $15.5 billion on these games. And the message to everybody is fill out a bracket and bet. That's the only way to enjoy March Madness. So there's no doubt, I think, that gambling is playing a big role in March Madness's TV viewership, just like it did with the NFL.
And tomorrow night, we're going to talk a little bit about that social betting and how that's driving the future for investors. Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate your time tonight. Let's get to Quicker Than the Ticker, all the rest of the headlines.
Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signing a new law limiting social media access for kids younger than 16. They'd have to have parents' permission. But for those 13 and younger, it's an outright ban on certain social platforms, though it's not clear which ones. Nissan is planning to launch 16 new electric vehicles in the next 3 years. And by 2030, the company aims to reduce the cost of EV production by a third. Joni Mitchell's comeback. The singer's putting her music back on Spotify following Neil Young's lead. Mitchell had yanked her music to protest at the time, Spotify giving voice to what she called COVID lies. Chick-fil-A will resume using antibiotics in chicken. The company originally went antibiotic-free in 2014. Now it's promising not to use antibiotics important to human medicine. Warmer weather and more demand is hitting Canada's maple syrup reserve, hitting a 16-year low. It accounts for 75% of the world's maple syrup production. Saudi Arabia will become home to the first ever Dragon Ball Z theme park. It's a hugely popular Japanese anime show. Ooh, that's 60 seconds. All right, coming up, Make It Mondays. We meet the CEO behind Relativity Space, a Mark Cuban-backed aerospace company shaping up to be one of SpaceX's top competitors. That's next.
Welcome back. It's time now for our Make It Mondays, and tonight we have a special one. We meet Tim Ellis, the CEO and co-founder of Relativity Space. It's a $4.2 billion aerospace company building reusable 3D printed rockets. Relativity Space also appeared on CNBC's Disruptor 50 list the past 3 years. The list highlights private companies seizing the biggest market opportunities. Let's take a look at an interview he did with our Make It team while building his first 3D printed rocket.
Hi, I'm Tim Ellis, CEO and co-founder of Relativity Space.
I was the youngest ever intern at Blue Origin. I did the first ever metal 3D printing at Blue Origin. Throughout these internships, I bought the first metal 3D printer and started kicking off the 3D printing division right after leaving. I was committed enough to trying to 3D print a rocket. No one had ever 3D printed very large scale aluminum structures with a robot arm before. And so it was really uncharted territory. Instead of having these big fixed tooling based factories, bending sheet metal or machining out these complex grid patterns on the inside of the structure, we're just gonna print them in. And in fact, the lighter weight we make our rockets, the faster it is to print and cheaper it is to build. I'd heard from one friend at USC that Mark Cuban actually responds to cold emails. And I laid out, I'm from Plano, worked at Blue Origin, joined North at SpaceX. Here's what our experience is. And then 5 minutes later, he said, well, what do you want from me? We're raising $500,000 for our seed round. He replied back, you know what? I'll actually do the entire thing. I'll give you the full $500,000. We sell space on our rockets for people to put their satellites, and the business model is launching things to orbit, same as what SpaceX does and other private launch companies. And so we have a launch site at Cape Canaveral. We also have one at Vandenberg Air Force Base. In many ways, Relativity is a playground for me to continue to learn from, and the more great people we bring onto the team, then you just learn even more, because now you have some of the world's best people to learn from.
Well, since then, Relativity Space successfully launched the Turan 1 rocket exactly 1 year ago this month. That rocket reached space but did not reach orbit. Well, now Tim and his team are developing a brand new, larger, reusable rocket called the Turan R, and it's partially 3D printed and will carry a larger payload than SpaceX's Falcon 9. Let's bring in Tim Ellis now. Tim, thank you for joining us on Last Call. When will that rocket try to lift off?
So great to be with you, Candessa. Turan R, which is a medium to heavy lift reusable rocket, building on top of our first launch to space of Turan 1, is launching in 2026. So it is a 3.3 million pound thrust rocket, about 40% larger than SpaceX's Falcon 9, which is the largest commercial rocket currently flying, and the most successful commercial rocket currently flying telecom satellites, other commercial companies, as well as governments globally. So really, the clear need is there to be a second quickly moving and disruptive launch company that is not just SpaceX. While they've been phenomenally successful, we really think, and why I founded Relativity was because 3D printing was a key technology that will help us iterate much faster and build a product that is competitive with what they're building today.
Is the business still really about putting satellites into outer space?
Yes, it really is. So we have sold $1.8 billion of rocket launches to date for Turan R. This is across 9 different customers, including some of the largest satellite telecom companies in the world. In almost every case, we are the second private company they have signed with, the first being SpaceX. So it really is the satellite industry looking for a diversified player. SpaceX is now building their own satellite constellation called Starlink, which has been very successful. But there is a clear need in launch because there's a global shortage of launch capacity. Wow. There's far more demand than there is supply of rocket launches globally. This is really exacerbated by SpaceX building Starlink, but also companies like Amazon, which are investing in their own satellite connectivity as well.
Tim, I know you want to get to Mars. When do you think that might happen?
So we actually have a partnership with the co-founder and CTO of SpaceX, Tom Mueller, to launch the first privately funded mission to Mars. We have exclusivity with his company, Impulse Space, through 2029. So we'll have our first launch attempt window in 2026 and then a second one in 2029. So we're working to actually land a privately funded mission on Mars this decade.
Your parents must be very proud of all that you have accomplished. Thank you so much, Tim, for bringing us a little bit of your story.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, from rockets to Rocket Man, do you know what happened 77 years ago? A Rocket Man was born, Elton John, March 25th, 1947. That's his birthday. Over the course of an illustrious career, Elton John put out 31 studio albums, 5 live albums, and 10 soundtracks with collaborations with artists in nearly every genre. His impact on the music industry, of course, is immeasurable. He just wrapped up his farewell tour, Yellow Brick Road, and is estimated to have brought in more than $900 million, the first tour ever to do so. So we say, well, I think it's gonna be a long, long time, or something like that. Happy birthday, Sir Elton, and happy retirement. That's Last Call for tonight. Shark Tank is next.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.